It's called Xylazine, and it's the latest chapter in the overdose story in Fargo. It's called the Fiscal Service Payment System, and Kevin Cramer says, we need to have some guardrails up if Elon Musk is going to have access to it. And it's called the NEPA Act, and it's not looking very good right now after a North Dakota judge says the federal government has taken power it does not have. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you for the Steve Hallstrom Show. We are here 4 to 6 every weeknight. Glad to be in the Fargo studio tonight with you. Tomorrow I will be in Watford City. We'll be doing the show from there. I understand we have a little weather coming our way, so I'm not too concerned about getting out, but it sounds like the drive home tomorrow night might be a little slow, so we'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll be coming to you 2 days in a row from Watford City. We will see what happens. Lots of ground to cover on the show today. We have a couple of guests on the phone lines today that I'm excited to visit with. We have a former CEO of a forestry products company. His name is Bob Owens, and he's been integral to the Minnesota lumber discussion for quite some time. And if you were with us last night on the show, I told you that I stumbled upon a really good conversation on social media about the lumber industry. And the person who put out the initial post said, I think the federal government should invest a little bit in lumber so the United States could be able to do more of its own logging and not have to import lumber and pulp products and all those things from Canada. And so it got me thinking about, boy, you know, do we import a lot of lumber? It seems like we got a lot of places to grow timber in this country. Well, what's the story there? So we're going to talk to Bob Owens about that today, and then we're going to continue the conversation we've been having on and off again for the last couple of years or so, and we're going to talk about your toxic burden. Yes, a health educator, Dr. Julie Gatza, has tips on reducing your toxic burden. No, this isn't like toxic masculinity or something like that. We're talking about improving your health and boosting energy. Dr. Gatza is someone who's done a lot of research and work on this subject, and she's going to bring us some things to help us feel a little healthier and boost our energy, and that sounds pretty good. So we got that to do today. We're also hearing some comments from Doug Burgum, who was on the Larry Kudlow program talking about U.S. energy and how we can make all these things happen. And what will happen if oil prices go down? Will the drillers want to keep drilling? And Doug Burgum says, absolutely. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the ongoing court case in North Dakota about the doctors and the parents who want to chemically castrate their children. So we'll continue that as well. And I'm going to ask the question, should the federal government be able to tell Costco that it cannot have a DEI policy? Should they be able to say that? It's an interesting question, one that has a different answer than maybe I thought it did. So we'll talk about this and get into that here today on the program. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co. I'm coming to you live from the Steve Hallstrom studio. And the studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to PCCND.com to learn more. All right, let's get going here with the 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on what's been a busy day. We start with the almanac for today, February 4th. Average high is 20. Average low is 1. Record high 51 degrees back in 1925. The record low minus 35 in 1886. Sunrise this morning was at 7:47 and sunset tonight will be at 5:35. We will gain 2 minutes and 52 seconds of daylight today. In the markets, it was a positive day on Wall Street. Not massive gains, but decent nonetheless. The Dow was up 134 points. S&P 500 up 43. The NASDAQ was up 262. Everybody's sort of shrugging off the whole tariff thing. They were all scared about it, a little worried. Stock market went down a couple days ago. Yesterday kind of found its footing. Today things going up a little bit. People saying, maybe this isn't really going to happen after all, or maybe it won't be so bad. WTI crude oil down about 40 cents at $72.70 a barrel. Gold today up $17 an ounce at $2,874. Silver up 35 cents at $32.88. And Bitcoin today, down pretty big, more than 5%, $96,251. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas unchanged from yesterday at $3.10. North Dakota's average price, $293. Minnesota, $294. South Dakota, $295. In the news today, WDAY Radio reports that city officials in Fargo say a powerful sedative that has killed thousands in the United States is now showing up in the Fargo-Moorhead area. The drug is called xylazine, or Trank, as it's unknown in the slang, in the slang world. Anyway, slang for xylazine. It's only approved as a tranquilizer for veterinary use, but the DEA says it has seen an uptick of seizures of the drug in this part of the country. Fargo police say nearly 30% of overdoses in the city were xylazine-related. That's interesting. Also in the city of Fargo, the city commission approved a committee that will create and manage the request for a proposal process on a new convention center during the meeting last night. So in a 3-2 vote, the commissioners decide they would be part of the committee. Mayor Tim Mahoney, Commissioner Denise Kopach voted against the motion. Pepcorn and Turnberg, who typically vote the way we think people should vote on these things, apparently think it'll create some transparency for the public and that the people on the city commission should be involved enough. It's a significant enough thing. They should be involved. So there you go. Pepcorn said, we've had an issue in the past where things are going on now in private that have to do with public trust and public dollars, so let's make it all public. So they're going to start meeting weekly. They're also going to go to St. Cloud and Rochester to look at examples of other convention centers that might make sense for Fargo. The Forum reports today that the Minnesota Republican Party announced it will file recall elections for all 66 House Democrats who are currently boycotting the session. Newly elected chairman of the Minnesota GOP, Alex Plekash, said early today that the party's grassroots organizers officially started collecting the 25 signatures required in each district to submit recall petitions. They began doing that yesterday. As you know, the legislature is in a bit of gridlock right now because the Democrats have not shown up. They're waiting for the results of other things to happen, recall elections and so forth. And so the Republicans say, we're going to start recall elections. So there we go. Our newsroom reached out to State Representative Heather Keeler of Moorhead, and she said, I'll give you a comment when you stop asking me these partisan questions from your organization. So she apparently doesn't like what we do here at our building. WDAY Radio says that three new bills are on the table surrounding legalized sports betting in Minnesota. I won't go into all the details about all of them, but I think it just goes to show you there is a lot of emphasis and momentum behind getting some kind of sports betting bill done in the state legislature this session, so we'll keep our eyes peeled on that. The Bismarck Tribune says North Dakota House legislators voted to remove state funding for public broadcasting today, going against committee recommendations. So the committee said, we know we should keep the funding intact, but the full body of the House said, no, we want to remove state funding for public broadcasting. It went through 61-32. Proponents of the bill said it provides an opportunity to look into Prairie Public Broadcasting, the largest public broadcasting organization in the state, for perceived editorial bias on stories that are happening across the state of North Dakota. WDAY Radio reports that Senator Kevin Cramer has said that he's a little concerned about Elon Musk and the Doge Department gaining control of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Fiscal Service payment system. He said, we need to make sure that we have to have some guardrails in place if Elon Musk is going to have that close of access to a system that is that consequential to what's happening, being that he's an unelected representative of the Trump administration. So that's happening today. Bismarck Tribune reports that North Dakota federal judge Dan Traynor, U.S. District Court Judge Traynor, deliver the latest blow to the Federal Council on Environmental Quality, finding that the agency for decades has exercised regulatory authority it doesn't have. The council was established by Congress in 1969, but Treanor says it was supposed to be an advisory body. In recent years, however, that particular group has formed and passed regulations for environmental projects that the federal government funds and permits, including pipelines, highways, airports, and other infrastructure. Treanor says there are a number of other rules that have been issued by the council that are likely unlawful, but he did not strike them down, just struck down one of them today. Valley News Live reports that North Dakota lawmakers have passed a bill that will end daylight savings time for the state and force permanent standard time, 55 to 37. We've talked about this a lot. It now goes over to the Senate. No time zones will be changed, but basically we will not have daylight savings time ever. And what we're on right now is what we'll be on. It will be light out at 4:30 in the morning. It will be dark at 8:30 at night. Or that's when the sun will set anyway, in the middle of the summer, which I don't like. If you're new to this conversation, you cannot go to daylight savings time and stay there. Congress has to approve that. I don't know why one is one way and the other is the other, but it is. And finally tonight, all 67 victims in the D.C. plane collision have been recovered now. 66 of them have been identified. They're still looking into the cause of the collision between the airplane and the Black Hawk helicopter, but they now have recovered remains from all 67 victims. I lied. I got one more for you here. CNBC reports that job openings declined sharply in December in the United States to 7.6 million, the lowest number since September. So basically, there are fewer jobs out there. The ratio now across the country is 1.1 to 1, the ratio of open jobs to available workers. And this tracks with what I'm hearing from a number of business people, that there are not as many job openings as there were a couple of years ago. Automation is doing some of it, / AI. People are willing to do with less service people, and they're just going smaller with their organizations. So it would be better if we were going the other way, but it is good to have some balance, too, with the number of people that we have working versus number of positions that are available. And those, friends, are some of the stories making headlines on this Tuesday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. When we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show, should the federal government tell Costco it can't have a DEI policy? I'm not so sure. Believe me, I get it. But should a business be able to have its own policy on this? I want to dig into that. We'll talk about it next. All right, let me say a couple things so that I'm very clear. Any policy in a workplace that promotes discrimination of any kind is wrong. Looking down at somebody because of their skin color, whether that's white or black, some of the policies that we've seen over the last 4 years has been very fashionable to put in programs that promote somebody because they are a person of color. Because we just want to have a certain number of people in those positions. It doesn't matter if they're good or bad at what they do. We just want people of color to be in certain positions. This is wrong. And I think it should be obvious, because for a long time we fought in this country to get rid of programs that discriminated against people because they were black or brown or whatever. So I hope we've made some progress on this. But I do get a little nervous when I hear that a group of attorneys general, which is, I guess, how you say it, even though it sounds kind of weird, is pressuring Costco to end its DEI practice. So what I'm saying is that I want to know more about what the DEI practices are. If they are the things of promote a person based on their skin color, that's obviously wrong. We don't want any of that. But do we know what Costco is doing? This is curious to me, and Drew Wrigley is one of them. And I want to know what they know, because they sent a letter to Costco CEO Ron Vacaris last week, basically saying that they wanted them to dismember and disband their DEI policies. Now, a policy of diversity, equity, inclusion can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different companies. They may handle it very differently. If they, as I said, are discriminating against people, there's no place for that. So the attorneys general sent a letter to the Costco CEO last week saying that they want to combat illegal private sector DEI mandates, policies, programs, activities. So I want to know what Costco is doing and what do they know? Because it sounds like they know that Costco is doing something here that is illegal. Because my first reaction always is let government and the courts, well, not the court, government should stay out of business and let the business people run their company the way that they would want it to. Now, again, if we're talking about things like discrimination, I get it. But I guess I'm going to have to learn a little bit more about what Costco is doing before I say they should not be allowed to have the diversity policies that they have. So we'll find out more. But the Costco hasn't responded to this letter, but there are 19 of these attorney generals who have said, you know, Costco, you need to tell us what you're doing. So I guess we just have to be patient on this one and see what comes up. And I will be very interested to hear what it is. And if it's the things we're talking about, then we can't have those. No question about it. Mark in Grand Forks is on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. He wants to talk about public radio today. Hi, Mark.
Hey, so believe me, I could go off on a long tangent about the DIE policy. I call it DIE because it's division, inequity, and exclusion. And if you have a policy like that, it's DOA. It should be DOA, dead on arrival.
So yeah, I just want to know what the
acronyms there.
Yeah, I just want to know what the Costco policy is, because I work for a company when I was, I don't know, a few years out of school, and we had like classes or get-togethers. We came in and we learned about different people groups and where they came from, and I thought it was good. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was helpful. But if we're talking about these programs where, you know, we have to put people, you know, in certain places because they have a certain skin color, those are wrong. So I just want to find out more about it. But you didn't call to talk about that, Mark. You want to talk about public radio.
Yeah, well, yeah, a couple of hot takes here quick. So public radio, I'm all in favor of taking away the funding of that. I mean, really what is true, and here's my basis, Steve, for saying that, is public radio in many ways, especially on the news side of it, has turned into the liberal arm and the liberal voice box of the government.
Yeah.
On the Democratic side. And here's the thing. If any sector of our, you know, economy can't survive without government subsidy being thrown in there, i.e. liberal radio, it needs to be cut. And if we're going to have public radio, it needs to be something where they just read the news and let you decide. Then not have all these stupid opinion shows about, you know, oh, here's why the economy was so great under Biden and why DEI policies are so good and why, you know, CRT is good in schools, all this kind of pablum that they throw out there. Mm-hmm. It needs to be fair and balanced, you know, like Fox used to be. And I'm not advocating that it go down the right side of the aisle or the left side of the aisle. What I would advocate for is it should be a centrist organization. So if it's not that, cut it. Get it out of here.
Yeah, the tough thing is it's so hard to come up with that scoring system because everybody looks at it so differently. So I kind of go back to your point originally of if they need subsidies to exist, then maybe they should have to fight for themselves like the rest of us in broadcasting do.
Yeah, well, and I mean, maybe the U.S. Weather Channel or whatever, that might be something that I would advocate for the weather bands and stuff like that, because we need to communicate.
But yeah, I got about 30 seconds left, Mark. So what did you want to say about daylight savings time?
Daylight savings time, real quick. Summers are short enough around here. Mm-hmm. You can't golf. Mm-hmm. You know, once the sun goes down, you can't do a lot of these other activities when the sun goes down. And obviously, companies aren't just going to say, okay, well, now we're going to adjust all of our work schedules so that we can work an hour earlier in the day. I think getting rid of this is a bad idea, so it has to still go to the state senate. Call your state senators and advocate against it. I hate the idea.
I do, too. I'd like to go to daylight savings and stay there, but apparently we can't. I don't know why that is. Like, we should be able to make that change happen if we wanted to. But I'm with you. If we can't stay on daylight savings time always, let's have it. But so many people, Mark, are like, oh, it destroys me for a week. I can't function. I'm like, an hour? But there's a lot of people that feel both ways. We've had a lot of conversations about it here on the show.
Go to bed.
Yeah, I don't want it to be light at 4:30 in the morning when I lose my hour of light from 8:30 to 9:30. That's all I'm saying. Mark, thanks for giving a call, my man. I appreciate you. You take care. All right, 4:30 here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. Austin Erickson is in from the Flag Family Newsroom, and he's been hard at work today. Good afternoon, Austin.
Good afternoon. Congress actually is the only one that can allow daylight savings year-round.
That's what I just said.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, though.
I was just making sure.
We've made sure that we've reinforced that point, yes.
So a powerful sedative that's killed thousands in the U.S. is showing up in the Fargo-Moorhead area. Xylazine, or Trank, is only approved as a tranquilizer for veterinary use. The DEA says it's seen an uptick in seizures of the drug in this part of the country. Fargo police says nearly 30% of overdose drugs in the city were xylazine-related, so it looks like fentanyl isn't the only drug that
the
police
only one.
Concerned with.
I saw this story, too. You guys did a nice write-up on the website, and I'm like, I've never even heard of this thing. It's a horse tranquilizer. Isn't that what, like, PCP is, or, like, LSD? One of those is a horse tranquilizer.
All I can say is any drug that's supposed to be used for a horse probably isn't good for human consumption.
I'm with you.
North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer says he's concerned with Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency gaining control of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Fiscal Service payment system. That includes the government's accounting, central payment systems, and Social Security numbers of most taxpayers. On the Jay Thomas Show on WDAY Radio, caller Matt called on Cramer to do something about Musk's actions, adding he is unelected and can get access to government contract information despite being a government contractor himself. And this is how Cramer responded.
It's too early to, as the caller says, to just swat it down, because we have this new president that won with this new mandate and doing all the things he said he was going to do. We need to make sure that if Elon Musk wants to have this oversight and use those skills and use those gifts in a patriotic way for his nation, we should let him. But there have to be some guardrails.
So that was Kevin Cramer earlier today on the Jay Thomas Show.
Yeah. Look, we could spend a half hour talking about this. We just need to know, before you express an opinion on is what they're giving Elon Musk right or wrong, what does he have access to? If he can see who the payments are going to, that's one thing. If he can change payments or, you know, route contracts or something, that's obviously a very different thing. So I think Kevin Cramer's comments are going to be construed by a lot of people to say that he's undermining Trump. I don't think that's what he's saying at all. I think when he says guardrails, sure, there's got to be some sort of limits to what he can do there, but just the fact that he has access to these things is not necessarily an evil sin here at the same time.
Well, some people are concerned that he has no accountability only to Trump and no congressional
oversight.
Yeah, but
which makes him no different than any other elected official who's ever been in any presidential administration. They're all that way.
Other than cabinet secretaries, they've been confirmed by Congress.
Yes, but their loyalties are with the president.
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing.
And they're going to follow whatever the president says.
Right. Or probably get fired.
Or probably get fired.
Meanwhile, in Minnesota, the Republican Party there launches an effort to recall the 66 DFL state representatives boycotting the House of Representatives. A website announcing the recall funded by MNGOP says, quote, "We cannot allow this betrayal of public trust to continue. It's about showing up, doing the job you're paid to do, and respecting the taxpayers who elected you. To initiate a recall election, more than 5,000 valid signatures of people living in each district must be obtained. Democrats have not shown up on floor sessions or committee hearings because they want GOP House Leader State Representative Lisa Daymuth to commit to a power-sharing agreement, including seating DFL State Representative Brad Tabke of Shakopee, who won his election by 14 votes. He won an election contest in court despite 21 ballots being missing. When asked for a comment on the MNGOP's recall effort and if she's concerned enough signatures will be gathered in a petition to call for a recall election, DFL State Representative Heather Keeler of Moorhead replied, quote, "Until you ask me questions that are rooted in a nonpartisan basis, I won't participate in your questions." And that was a reply to me.
Yep. This story, just the gift that keeps on giving. If they do a recall election on Heather Keeler, she's likely going to win anyway because it's Moorhead. It's a blue district. So I get what they're doing. I understand why they're doing it. This is why we hate politics, because of all these little back and forth battles and how we cannot get people seated and get these elections done is beyond me, why we have this kind of gridlock going on in St. Paul. So much to be done. No
right.
Question
and
about
the only thing I foresee it going towards is a special session, because no budget or no other bills are made, because the Senate is in session and they had a power sharing agreement. They had an agreement where DFLers and Republicans would each be committee chairs and would have a say in the leading of that body. Recently, a Minneapolis state senator, a DFL state senator, won their election, a special election. So that power sharing agreement is nullified. But still, it's interesting how one chamber can do it and the other can't.
Yeah, and it's crazy. We've never had this happen before, to be quite honest.
We've had a tied house, but not
like this. Yeah. Thanks, Austin. Austin Erickson checking in from the Flag Family Newsroom. It's 4:36. Time now to check in on the weather that we've got going on, and things are going to get a little interesting here over the next few days. Skywatch meteorologist Dean Wysocki's got the forecast for us.
Steve, we're looking at a lot of cloud cover throughout the rest of the afternoon and evening hours, and temperatures well below normal, only in the single digits. Thankfully, we have light northeast winds out there. Tonight, we'll hang on to the clouds and nearly steady temperatures in the single digits with light northeast winds. Now, Wednesday, we'll see winds turn to the southeast, about 10 to 15, highs in the upper teens, and we'll see some light snow overspread the area from the west as we head late in the day. It looks like after about 3 o'clock or so. So your morning and early afternoon commutes will be okay. And then that light snow will continue through about midnight with about an inch, maybe 2 inches here in the FM area, slightly higher amounts, possibly up to 3 inches in the far northern valley and into east into Minnesota, lesser amounts to our south and west. So snowfall amounts won't be a problem, but winds on Thursday are really going to ramp up out of the northwest, 20 to 35 and gusty. That will produce quite a bit of blowing and drifting to the snow, especially Thursday morning for areas of the Northern Valley east into Minnesota. And I think we'll have our own issues with some blowing snow, slippery travel here in the FM area for Thursday morning. Temperatures remain in the teens through the rest of the week. And then another system, this one looks to affect the Central and Southern Valley more as we head into Friday late in the day, lasting into early Saturday. That one we could see about 2 to 5 inches with the lighter amounts in the Northern Valley and the 3 to 5 inches possible here in the FM area. Good thing with that is I don't see a lot of wind after that system departs later in the weekend, but temperatures remaining cold only in the teens. So no big storms heading our way, but we get these little systems that come through, and we've got a couple more that we're going to have to deal with. We're in the stormy part of the LRC cycle, so that will last through about the 20th of this month.
Okay. Thank you, Dino. Appreciate the update. When we come back on the program, should the federal government try to promote the logging industry and the lumber industry in this country? It's come up a lot this week because a lot of our lumber gets imported from Canada, and there's a potential tariff battle brewing. Bob Owens is a former CEO of Owens Forest Products out of Minnesota, and he'll give us his perspective when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. While we're waiting to connect with Bob Owens, former CEO of Owens Forest Products here, let me talk to you a little bit about kind of how this whole thing came up. This was over the weekend. I kind of stumbled on a really, I thought, really good and interesting conversation that got me thinking a lot. And I think there's a conversation to be had here, not just about the lumber industry itself, but it started out as a conversation about lumber. And what all happened here with this discussion is that a gentleman put out a post, and he said that, you know, we've got to take a look here. And maybe the federal government starting to get involved a little bit in propping up the lumber industry in our country. And I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. And then I started reading some of the comments from people that weighed in on this as well. And I thought, you know, there's some really interesting conversation going on here with the posts and the responses that are happening here with the lumber import problem. This all came about, of course, with the talk about tariffs and if Canada was going to impose big tariffs on the United States. And the gentleman starts saying there's a simple long-term solution to this lumber import problem: bring back our mills. A relatively small investment from the Trump administration could revitalize old logging towns across the country and create good jobs. We don't need Canadian lumber. We can mine within reason. We can harvest timber responsibly. We can extract oil and gas responsibly as well. None of these industries need to be destructive to the environment. We can learn from mistakes of the past and manage extraction like civilized people. Additionally, there's room on the right to make the case that we are the people who care about the environment right now. It's certainly not the group that wants to pave the West in hideous solar panels. And I said, you know what? That's actually a pretty good point there. And some of the people weighed in. talking about this, that they have the same experience. One guy said, I grew up in a conservative Oregon mining town. Now it's a liberal retirement hellscape. I cannot forgive the liberals for what they did to my home state and my hometown. Another one said, I live in the middle of the woods in Montana, a logging community. I know what I'm talking about. They stopped logging here when lumber can be bought cheaper in Canada. We don't need their lumber except for the hand-picked old logs used for log homes. I personally believe people shouldn't build log homes for many reasons off topic here, but lumber is a renewable resource except for trees that are hundreds of years old that people use for the log houses. You're 100% correct. We don't need Canadian lumber. We need have a lot of guys out of work when the U.S. mill is shut down and the harvesting stopped and the log trucks stopped running. And our construction materials money is now being sent to Canada instead. So this is an interesting conversation. What do you think about this? Should the government get involved stimulating the lumber industry and getting more logging done here? Should the government prop up some of these old mills and get them going again? You could say the same about a lot of industries, right? Things that have been done elsewhere now because it's cheaper to buy it. Why is it cheaper to buy it in Canada than it is in the United States? Same thing with manufacturing. Is it the labor is that much cheaper? Certainly it can't be true for Canada. It can't be way less expensive to bring in lumber from Canada. We've got enough lumber, don't we? I mean, I don't think a lot of people are, you know, thinking, man, when's the last time I saw a tree in this country? But a lot of the lumber is in the blue states, right? When you think about it, kind of the West Coast. I suppose Montana is still kind of red. Idaho is still kind of red. But there's a lot of lumber out that way. No doubt about it. New York, New Hampshire, Vermont, I suppose that's true as well. So what do you think? Should the federal government try to prop up the logging industry? And is that one where we could basically benefit from having things that get brought back here to our country? It'd be nice. And I've got to think there's a lot of, it's kind of like mining, right? I mean, if you go to the Iron Range in Minnesota, they don't do as much mining as they used to. A lot of it is the environmental restrictions in Minnesota. Minnesota has a fair amount of timber industry as well in northern Minnesota. A lot of timber going on there as well. We do a fair amount of business in Grand Rapids, where we've got radio stations over in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And there was supposed to be a big particle board plant that was going to go in just outside of Grand Rapids. And eventually the company that was kind of getting this effort going, there was so much restriction and so many regulations in Minnesota, right? It's not just that they hate, certain industries. It's that there's so much regulation. They get involved in everything, and that means the government gets bigger and the taxes get bigger and we need more government to run the regulation, that the company that's going to build the particle board plant just said, we're done. We're out. We're not doing this. And it was going to bring in, I don't know what they were talking about, like, was it 600 jobs? No, that's maybe too many. Anyway, it was a fair amount of jobs, a lot of money for the local economy that they lost out there in Itasca County because the state of Minnesota was punitive to do business in. What a shock, right? And it's like, I don't know why. I think it's just the reason that these things are happening is because there is so much regulation. In North Dakota, they're talking about there might be an opportunity to have some of these big data centers because we have such a light touch with regulation that the regulatory environment, low taxes, works really well. So I don't know where that particle board plant went. I don't know that it came to North Dakota necessarily, but it's not in Minnesota anymore. So I don't know if you have an opinion on that, but I'd like to hear it. If you have some thoughts on that one, bring back our mills, make logging great again. Malaga. It doesn't have quite the same ring to it. All right. So the trial is continuing on the state's ban on sex change surgery prevention for minors. Yeah, it's being called the gender affirming care case, but you and I know it's not that. So a psychologist spoke in this court case in favor of the state's ban on these surgeries for minors, arguing that the testimony of North Dakota doctors who treat transgender adolescents is not reliable. As you remember, a North Dakota passed a law back in 23 criminalizing sex change surgeries on minors. Again, I feel like I have to say this every time. We are talking about kids under 18. I literally cannot believe we are even having this conversation, but here we are. You can't wait till they're 18 to completely rewire all their plumbing. Now, we got to do it when you're 12. So anyway, James Cantor was called by the state to testify in a trial challenging the law. The lawsuit brought by a North Dakota pediatric doctor who says it's an unconstitutional infringement on personal rights against these parents and the children. So Cantor, this Toronto psychologist, has established himself as a voice against sex change surgeries. I have to edit this every time I read that term. Testifying as a witness for states trying to establish similar bans or related laws. The forum had this story today, and they actually got it from North Dakota Monitor. So the cynic in me is feeling like the reporter here wants to make the point that this psychologist is from out of state. He's from Toronto, and he just travels around this carpetbagger talking about how this is a bad thing for kids or whatever. And then the reporter goes on to say he doesn't have expertise diagnosing or treating minors with gender dysphoria. Instead, he said is based his testimony, he said, is based on his review of research. And Cantor says adolescents struggling with gender dysphoria would be better off seeking therapy. He says, we really have no idea what the long-term consequences are of these treatments and surgeries. Well, okay, I'm on his side, but I can tell you what the long-term consequences are of sex change surgery or chemical castration or hormonal therapy or whatever. So this this case goes on, and they think they might be wrapped up, you know, middle part of the week or so. Four doctors with experience having these surgeries with transgender kids have testified that for some patients, these sex change surgeries are life-saving, which they have no way of knowing. It's just their theory, but we're gonna go on that. Again, we're talking about 15, 16, 17-year-old children who have no idea who they are or what they want to be or what life is going to be. And worse yet, we're doing these surgeries on younger children than that as well. The whole thing's child abuse, and I don't know why it's so hard to understand that. All right, here we go. Hour number two, the Steve Ahlstrom Show. On this Tuesday afternoon, February 4th, 2025, 10 days left till Valentine's Day. You got a little bit of time to do your shopping, boys, but let's put a hop on it. You don't want to be sitting around on the 14th trying to figure what to do. I've been there. It's not fun. So make this the year. You get your act together ahead of time. All right, we begin the 5 o'clock hour with the top five at five, the five most consequential storylines in the news cycle today. And I'm struggling a little bit because I got seven stories here and I can't narrow them down. So I'm going to play a little story roulette here, and I'm going to kind of close my eyes and click on five of my seven. And I think that maybe I'll do a six. Maybe I'll do all seven and let's go fast. Top seven and five today. Here we go. All right. 1 month after we reported that job openings unexpectedly soared on a record 2 month surge in professional services, the Bureau of Labor Statistics today reported that the big roller coaster just collapsed. December job openings unexpectedly dropped by more than a half million, from 8.15 million to just 7.6 million, the second lowest number since the COVID crash. So how are things going in the job market? Story number two, officials say it's called xylazine, but the kids call it Trank. It's only approved as a tranquilizer for veterinary use, but it's showing up in the Fargo-Moorhead area. People are taking it as a recreational drug. It's not going well. Fargo police say nearly 30% of overdoses in the city in 2024 were xylazine-related. I had not heard about this, but that apparently is a thing. Yeah, generally, if you're going to use it to tranquilize a horse, probably taking it as a person, not a great idea. Valley News Live reports the Fargo City Commission has approved a committee that is going to start a request for proposal process on a new convention center. As you might remember, voters in the city approved a lodging tax to fund a new convention center in November. Well, the city commissioners voted 3-2 that they would be a part of the committee. Dave Pepcorn says, we've had a public trust issue with our spending lately, and this will give us some more transparency. So they're going to start visiting some convention centers in St. Cloud and Rochester to get a feel for it. Story number four, the Minnesota Republican Party is taking the unusual step of filing recall elections for all 66 House Democrats who are currently boycotting the session. As you probably remember, or you probably have heard, they're in a bit of a gridlock there because the Democrats will not show up to do the votes. And the Republicans are there, but the Democrats are boycotting the session because they don't like the way the Republicans are playing in advance of a special election going on there. So that's story number four. Story number five, Prairie Public Broadcasting may be taking its final breaths in the state of North Dakota. It's the largest public broadcasting organization in the state, but North Dakota lawmakers in the House have voted to pull funding for public broadcasting by a vote of 61-32. They say they're a little concerned that the public broadcasting people are all about abortion rights and too liberal on the social issues finding its way into the reporting. Story number six, also in the North Dakota legislature, the House voted 55-37 in favor of eliminating daylight savings time, which means we would stay on standard time forever. We would never get daylight savings time, and it would be sunset at 8:30 in the summer, but it would be sunrise at about 4:30. So we're losing an hour of daylight at the end of the day and putting it at 4:30 in the morning. But a lot of people like this. I don't get it myself. And finally, a sad story here, but I guess it provides some closure. All 67 victims in the D.C. plane collision have now been recovered, according to NBC News. 66 of them have been identified, so they haven't been able to match up the last body, I guess, or the remains. Sort of grotesque, but that's what we have here after the collision that happened a little over a week ago. So sad deal there, but at least some closure for the families. And those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories, actually the seven, in the news cycle today. It's brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small-town living is still a thing. That is the top five at five. When we return, Doug Burgum is talking energy. And he says if oil prices go down because of increased supply, because we're drilling more in the country, major oil companies are not going to be scared to do more drilling. That's next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Business owners, building managers, listen up. Card Care Systems is the people you got to get to know. They are your best choice for an ATM partner. You just provide the location and Card Care Systems handles the rest. You get a share of the ATM fees with lower credit card processing fees. They sell and service ATMs for area businesses as well. They're supremely grateful for the opportunity to serve their outstanding customers over the last 28 years. And nobody provides better ATM customer service than Card Care Systems. Contact them to see if you qualify for their free 90-day placement program and start improving your bottom line today. Go to getmyatm.com, getmyatm.com. Or call 701-235-3090. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum knows what he's talking about when he discusses how a new presidential administration might be able to help the energy industry. As a former governor of North Dakota, he knows, probably painfully well, how difficult it was to get any energy exploration or drilling or transportation or marketing, any of that done under the Biden administration. And while true that the industry itself had a very productive 4 years, it was despite Joe Biden, not because of Joe Biden. So now with Donald Trump in office, the new Secretary of the Interior had a chance to visit with Larry Kudlow on the Larry Kudlow Show on Fox Business. And Larry Kudlow said, what do you make of Donald Trump and all these tariff negotiations and how that might play into oil coming into the country or us developing here in the United States. What goes into that, Mr. Burgum?
Well, Larry, I think this is just more people underestimating President Trump. I mean, you look at the wins that he's had in his first 2 weeks in office. You take a look at, you know, Colombia folding, Mexico folding. You know, this is the guy that wrote the Art of the Deal 30 plus years ago, and he's learned a lot in the last 30 years. You know him well. And certainly there's an opportunity here in the United States. We've got some of the highest regulatory costs. That's gone up under climate extremism under Biden. When we start tearing down those regulatory rules, the lack of, you know, taking years or never getting drilling permits on public land, the Department of Interior itself controls 25% of the oil production in the country on public lands. And Joe Biden didn't issue any permits.
You remember that? They were like suing him every 6 months. Because he was not having these these lease auctions that were required by law.
He was the first president since Harry Truman that wasn't issuing permits. It's against the law what he was doing. So we can open up opportunities for lower cost production. We can cut it through cutting red tape. And then on the demand side, you see what's happening. Last week, Chevron makes a big announcement. This is a you know, global multinational that says, hey, we're going to get into electric production with our natural gas. That's the first a crossover where we've got an oil company saying we're going to produce electricity. They understand that we're short of electricity in this country. And as you know, you can't build a pipeline in this country under Joe Biden. And with the time of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we were offloading 400,000 barrels of dirty Russian heating oil into New England so people in New Hampshire and Maine could heat their homes with heating oil.
I want to take a second on this. There's been a lot of conversation that I've heard, and maybe I just wasn't listening for it, but in the last 2 weeks, I've heard more people talking about converting natural gas to electricity on site, basically becoming their own utility. That's what Dr. Mayo at Chaley Institute told us that they would need to do in North Dakota to fund or to power these massive data centers. You'd have to have a natural gas pipeline, LNG, liquid natural gas, from the Bakken over to Fargo area somewhere, and probably one to Bismarck too, where the other big facility would be placed. And you need to then have these big massive turbines that will be able to convert the natural gas into electricity and generating it on the spot, because the electric demand, the demand for power, would overwhelm the grid. So we're hearing a lot more about this whole concept of creating your own electricity through natural gas.
President Trump, he believes that every American ought to be able to use clean natural gas to heat their homes. Yeah. And when we get pipelines flowing in this country, we're going to see demand up. We're going to see production up in the U.S.
So, oil's about $70 today, as you well know. Brent's a little higher. West Texas about $70. A lot of people think you need to get oil down. I'm going to say, let's call it $55. Could be 50, could be 60, I don't know. That would hurt Russia in the war against Ukraine. That would hurt Iran in all the Middle East terrorist wars, okay? Wouldn't help China much either, but just saying. Can oil companies make money? Can the frackers, can the independents, can the majors, could they make money at $50 a barrel? In your judgment, as former governor of North Dakota, you know a whole lot about this. You live with them up there, Harold Hamm and so forth. $50, can they make money? That would bring inflation down, interest rates way down. I think that's what Mr. Trump really wants, $55. Can they make money there?
Well, nobody should underestimate the shale revolution and the entrepreneurs that drove that, because during the last price war, the guys that are still alive and still running those businesses, they did figure out a way to increase their productivity per well. They did lower their break-even costs, become more profitable. But now we've got to help them. Joe Biden increased the break-even costs with all the regulations.
Right.
And
right.
As you know, in commodities, there's the price of oil, but then there's the price of transportation. And we should be able to, if we get pipelines built in this country, we consume more of that energy on site for electricity, turn electricity into data on site, manufacture intelligence, and then move that
move that product around through a fiber optic cable. You know, we've got an opportunity to do consumption near where we do production. That takes the transportation cost down to almost nothing. So all that's about the margin. It's not about the gross price. It's about the profitability on the bottom. And we can take cost out of transportation. We can take cost out of production because of the regulatory side. There's going to be a lot of profits to be made in this industry going forward.
So last one, Ms. Secretary. You can, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can drill and excavate for natural gas without going for oil. Natural gas, clean burning fuel. We have enough for the next 500 years or whatever, maybe longer. That would power the AI revolution. That would power the country. It's pretty inexpensive. Last time I looked, it was about $3. It had gotten low as $2. It's clean burning and so forth and so on. And by the way, if we sell LNG to Europe, then they'll stop buying Russian natural gas and Russian oil, which would be another plus. Can you drill natural gas by itself and then sell it like all get out around the world, as well as employ it here at home? Last one.
Well, we can, and we should never forget about Alaska. Alaska is just a massive resource of natural gas. We've got an opportunity with Japan, Philippines, South Korea, you know, signing 20-year offtake agreements with some of those countries, displacing them buying oil from the Mideast. It's only 6 days ship from Alaska to Japan, most secure supply line they would have. So we have big opportunities for ourselves both in Europe and in the Pacific. You know, bring peace abroad and bring prosperity at home. When we get done with this, Donald Trump's going to be winning a Nobel Peace Prize.
You got it. Yes, sir.
Okay. That made Larry laugh. Why not? Right? I mean, look, supply, abundant supply of reasonably priced energy, that can be a good thing. It might cause some people to get a little nervous, but I like it. Look, I've said this before, and I want to keep saying it because I feel like at some point, like this is going to be something like Sean Hannity is going to say on his program someday, and everybody's going to say, oh, Sean Hannity, I think you heard it here first on the Steve Holcomb Show, if I might be so bold, but AI might be that thing that backs people off the climate jihad, because it's all about money anyway. And we know that AI, these data centers, need a massive amount of energy, and nobody hates AI. I think there's people who are a little nervous about, is it replacing all the people or whatever, but nobody on the left hates AI. They hate fossil fuels, but they might love AI enough that they might hate fossil fuels just at a low enough threshold where they might say, well, as long, and they wouldn't say this out loud, but as long as I can make money on this somehow, maybe I could put up with fossil fuels, because it's all about money. They don't believe any of the stuff they say about fossil fuels and we got to be all, they know. China's opening up a coal plant every week. That means they're not shutting one down every week. That means there's more coal plants all the time. It might be artificial intelligence, because you cannot have that kind of baseload power without having oil, coal, natural gas, all the things that we do really good here in this country, and people want to eliminate it because they have a theory on some other kind of energy source that could maybe someday do it, so they want to kill all the good sources of energy, the reliable sources of energy now, so they can, I don't know what they're trying to do. It sounds like they're trying to hurt the country, if you ask me. But AI might be that thing that backs people off the fight to go all green and no fossil fuels. I don't know. It's very interesting. Doug Burgum, I thought, had a good point there at the end of his comments too. You know, let's ship it. Let's market it. Let's get it out. Basically make it so people have the energy they need. You know, import or export it to our friends rather than buy it from our enemies. Let's go. We've got plenty of energy here. We just got to open it all up. And Doug Burgum is the guy to get it done. I saw they confirmed Chris Wright too yesterday. And that's big, you guys. That's big. He had a tougher slog than Doug Burgum did. Doug talks that carbon neutral net zero stuff really well. I don't know that he necessarily believes that it's a climate problem. I think he's just looking to do business. And if there's more ways to do business, then so be it, all the better. So, but they got Chris Wright done. That's big, because he is one of those You know, climate change is a myth. You know, something for the Dr. Seuss book. So I'm not surprised he got through, but it was a little there was a little more opposition there to him than there was to Burgum. But we got that done. We've got the right people now that are doing all of this stuff. We got Burgum, got Chris Wright, getting all this stuff done. And boy, you just take a look at the star power that we have working for us now. You know, Tom Homan, Stephen Miller, Kristi Noem, doing the immigration stuff. These couple of guys doing the energy stuff. This is going to be absolutely fantastic. Really, really happy that Doug got through. And now Chris Wright being there too. We can start opening things up. Now the states are going to have something to say about that. You're still not going to be able to build a pipeline from the Bakken to Washington, which would be wonderful. Not going to do it because Washington won't take it. They won't have it. And the federal government can put some heat on them, but the states still get to do what the states want to do. And but thought that was interesting conversation from the governor. I tell you every once in a while that one of my favorite websites is usdebtclock.org. And I had to wonder, or I was wondering not too long ago, and I had to find out, what is that doing now on our amount of debt that is increasing? And right now, we're at, I don't know what it is. We're at, I'll look it up here quick. Debt Clock says that we are sitting right now with a national debt of $36.4 trillion. And I, every so often, will take the time to count how long does it take for the interest to accrue to the tune of $1 million on the level of national debt we have. Now, the debt keeps going up, so it tends to happen a little faster all the time. So I think when I started keeping track, it was like every 26 seconds when I started doing like Need to Know Morning Show 10 years ago or whatever. It was like every 26 seconds we added $1 million. Last, when I checked it before the election, it was $1 million of interest every 20 seconds. I just did it yesterday, and it was $1 million of interest every 19 seconds. So we are going backward on this kind of a thing. I said that wrong. 14. What am I doing here? I'm drawing a blank. We've gone the other direction. It's taking longer. And I don't remember where I was at with my pathway here. But it is slowing down. 21 seconds is what I meant to say. So $1 million of interest every 21 seconds, where it was 20 seconds before. So we've moved ourselves a second the right way. This is a typo I put in there, and for some reason it screwed me up. So it's slowing down a little. I mean, it's still a lot of money. We still keep piling up the debt. So I did this a couple of times, and could I be off by a little bit? Yeah. Could it be about the same amount of time? I just think, like, as you take a look at the debt clock, we're now up to $57.6 billion in savings that the Doge guys have found. Basically, they'll say, you know, we're not paying the WHO anymore for this, or United Nations or NATO or whatever. We're saving that money. And so that's saving the United States X amount. So as the year goes on, you take, you know, if it's $500 million you were given to NATO, you divide that by the 365 days and every second or whatever. And they map all this out on the debt clock, and they get themselves to, right now, $57 billion. So this is pretty cool. I mean, the first few days of the Trump presidency, it was at like 2 and then 3 and 6. And now we're going to town on this thing. And they've only been at it really a couple of weeks. So I just want to give you that update on the debt clock. Every 21 seconds now, not 19. Okay, it is 5:31. We are going to take a short news and weather break here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And then after that, we're going to visit with Dr. Julie Gatza. She's a health educator, and she has tips for reducing what she calls your toxic burden to improve health and boost energy. You've heard the talk about toxic masculinity. We're going to talk about your toxic burden. It's actually something you don't mind talking about. We'll do that as we continue here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. 5:35, Steve Hallstrom Show. Labor Masters is your best choice when you need quality, reliable help. They are Fargo Moorhead West Fargo's number one choice for daily and temp labor. No job is too big. No project is too small. The team at Labor Masters works with more than 200 businesses in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and they provide a wide range of daily and temporary employment positions. We've used them before. You'll love the experience just as much as we did as well. Go to labormasters.net, 701-566-8755 if you'd like to call instead. Talk to Nancy and the team over there. They've been doing it for decades in this community. They know how to get people to work. And their website, again, labormasters.net. Get the quality, reliable help that you need today. Well, when I get an email come across my desk and it says, feeling tired, bloated, or run down, it might be what you're eating. I do two things. Number one, I read it twice to make sure I read it right. And then second of all, I go, yeah, that might be me a little bit there. And a lot of the things that we eat that we think are healthy maybe aren't. And so I am really happy to visit with somebody today that can help us get into this conversation a little bit. Dr. Julie Gatza is a co-founder of the Florida Wellness Institute. And Julie joins us here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line to talk a little bit today about tips for reducing what she calls our toxic burden. Hi, Dr. Gatza. Thanks for your time today.
Hi. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to talk to you. Well, when you say that you've got some ideas to improve our health and boost energy, I think most of us say, okay, I'm listening. So what would you like to share with our audience today?
Well, first and foremost, I always want to tell my patients and anyone I'm talking to that your digestive tract is pretty much your litmus to how your health is. If you have any gas, bloating, indigestion, heartburn, constipation, diarrhea, or acid reflux, it may be very, very common, but none of it is normal. And it simply means what you're eating, you cannot break down. So it's either you're eating too much of it, you're made bad choices, or your digestive system is lacking usually enzymes to help you break down the food so you get ultimately the nutrients from your food, which is the only reason for eating other than the fact that some of it tastes pretty good.
Yeah, right. So what percent of our population has got some kind of health problem that stems from some of these things that are residing in our bodies because of what we've been eating?
96%.
Oh, okay. Okay. Darn it. I was hoping that number was going to be a lot lower so some of us could get off the hook, but no such luck.
No, not in this country. I mean, our food and our water and our soil has been changed. The seeds are changed. We have a whole group of people that, you know, are battling their health and weight and energy and hormones and, you know, their brain fog and you name it and stuff that was not what we were battling the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But things have been changed so dramatically that, you know, you look at people on the beach. I live in Florida and you're hard pressed to find a slim, pretty body as compared to seeing pictures of people in the 60s and 70s. And every single person on the beach had a very normal, nice, slim, healthy-looking body. And they were not exercising, and they weren't taking all the nutrients that we're taking now, and there weren't that many health food stores. So, you know, what changed? So I can't change every single thing about what's going on in this country, but one of the things that I definitely do is I try to give them good tips. I try to make sure that they're taking really high-quality digestive enzymes so that they can break down the toxic foods and break down the good foods. And those few things put together can change just about anybody's health within a week, 2 or 30 days.
Oh, wow. So it can happen as fast as just within a week or so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you've talked about digestive enzyme supplements and then foods as well. Give us some suggestions on what kinds of things, whether it's food or supplements, what do you recommend that might actually help us have a better situation in regard to this and get rid of that kind of toxic burden, as you call it?
Okay. Well, the one thing that I would say that's probably a good way that you can always remember is, what would you feed a sick 2-year-old that was dropped off at your front door?
Mm.
You certainly wouldn't feed it fast foods. You wouldn't give it a bunch of salads. You wouldn't feed it a bunch of coffee, tea, soda pop, and you wouldn't probably sit down and feed it a lot of pastas and pizzas and breads. What would you feed it? You would feed this kid fish and chicken and steamed green vegetables and lots of water and, you know, some fruit, but I wouldn't give him anything from a package, a box, or a can. And when you just go back to clean eating, just clean eating, it doesn't mean you can't flavor them and use herbs and lemon and lime and garlic, and but you want to, you know, clean it up and not put everything on hot sauce and everything from a package, a box, and a can. And you start to see that the system goes, oh, I don't need all this fat. I don't need all this salt. Boy, broccoli does start to taste a bit better. And when you start, you know, stop feeding yourself all these salt-laden, sugar-laden foods that are processed with seed oils and, you know, pretty much it isn't food after a while. It's just something that your taste buds like and your body is demanding once you start eating a lot of it.
Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of research that goes into the food products that we eat and how can they make us want more of those products. I know that's a big deal, too. Short of, like, you know, trying to sell a product here, but some of these enzyme supplements that are on the market, what do you want us to look for to try to find something good to work in conjunction with these good healthy foods that we should eat more of?
Well, one I have found, and you know, it sounds like really, but this is my experience in 34 years of doctoring, you do get what you pay for. It is so across the board, if you're buying something cheap at the health food store, unless it really is an inexpensive thing to make, like potassium is very inexpensive to make, and there's not a lot of different forms of them. So when you're buying potassium, it's cheap. But when you're buying good quality nutrition, when you're paying better money for it, you're getting better quality because it does cost to make them correct.
Okay.
I use one called Absorbaid. It's a vegan formula. It's basically like eating all the greatest fruits and vegetables and different things that you can combine that will help you break down food. So you can take it with a meal to break down your meal. You can take it if you're deciding to eat poorly and you want to get the toxins out faster. You can take it on an empty stomach and it helps with inflammation in the body. So if you have joint pains, you take it at night and it helps with that. It helps with toxins and poisons and food poisoning and bacteria and viruses. So you can't go wrong taking a really good high quality digestive enzyme because I think it's more important than taking a multivitamin. I think it's better to break down the foods that you're putting on your plate that you've bought, that you're prepared and you're eating, as compared to trying to supplement with something from a jar that has 100 things in it at once and hoping you get them in.
Yeah.
It's better to break down the
food. Okay.
Now, that doesn't say don't take vitamins. It just says let's take, you know, what's most important.
Yes. Yep. Good advice there. Just so our listeners know, are you paid to endorse Absorbaid or it's just something that you've used and you feel like it works about as good as anything?
I am a spokesperson for the company, but I've used it for so many years that I won't change to using anything else even when I have a choice because it works so well. So
okay.
I just brought back a new one from the office today and I keep a bottle of it on the counter and everyone that's at my house takes Absorbaid. So
okay. All right,
we
fair
get
enough.
Through it, and well, family and friends, I, you know, if I give it to them as a gift, they think it's a great gift.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the honesty on that. I just thought it was worth us knowing. So
yeah.
You talked about also earlier some healthy snacks as alternative to packaged snacks that might be good for us, things that don't have as many artificial flavors and colors and so forth. What kind of healthy snacks are out there you think might be of benefit to us?
Well, pretty much not in a package box or a can. I keep saying that because if you have to read ingredients. There's more than one in it. It's questionable often. So, for instance, you could get whole raw almonds. You could soak them overnight. That helps to release the enzymes. If you take the skin off, which comes off really easily, you'll find it's like pencil shavings when it's sitting on the counter and it's mm-hmm. dried up a bit. So the yummy inside that's been soaked, you rinse them. That is an excellent snack. I know eggs are quite weird and expensive right now, but a hard-boiled egg goes far. And let's just say an egg costs a dollar right now. That's cheaper than you're going to pay for anything else that's the best protein. It comes in its own container. You could throw it in your purse. You could throw it in a plastic bag. And you could unpeel it, and there it is. There's your protein source. And you're going to be satisfied and not wanting a whole bunch of more French fries or a bigger Big Mac or whatever the heck it is that people are eating these days. You know, cut up vegetables. I mean, it's not just what moms do for kids. It actually is satisfying, especially if you have it in your fridge in a clear container. It's sitting in water. Now those carrots are fresh. The celery is fresh. Radishes are fresh. And you can sit and eat those, and you'd be amazed at how full and satisfying they are as compared to sitting around and eating half the bag of potato chips.
Yeah, makes sense. When we're trying to find a good multivitamin or a good supplement that way to what we eat each day, what are some of the things we want to look for in multivitamins? And then what are some of the things that maybe might look good on the label but really don't do much good for us? Any tips on multivitamins?
You know, I wish that I had a great tip for you on a multivitamin. I haven't found that I'm that impressed. Now, it doesn't mean don't take it, but once again, it really is, you do get what you pay for. So if you're doing, you know, I hate to use, but something like Centrum, I mean, it is just the bottom of the barrel of the ingredients that just was, you know, able to be able to put onto the label and say, hey, it's got all these things in there. Yes, it does, but can it get absorbed? And is it really stuff that can get into the body? No. So you're just taking something that's empty. So if you compare that price to something else that has just as many pills in the bottle and you see that that other one is three or four times more than that, that's the one you want, because they had to do the work to make it workable and to make it absorbable. And there are lots of choices out there in the vitamin world, and it's not really policed that well. But, you know, if you're going to take certain vitamins, like let's say vitamin E, you can never find a cheap E that's going to work.
Yeah, you get what you pay for on vitamin E as well. I want to ask
Absolutely. I think it's across the board.
Okay. I want to ask you about sugar. We don't call sugar a drug, really, most of the time, but, man, I wonder. You have a little sugar, and, gosh, you want more. And I don't know that a whole lot of good stuff happens when you're ingesting sugar in any amounts at all. How bad for us is sugar?
I mean, you know, I am no angel, but I certainly know how to clean up my act if I need to. And I noticed that I went back home to Chicago over Christmas, and boy, oh boy, the sugar train was hard to stop. And every favorite food I ever wanted to eat, I tried again. And oh my, I was lethargic. I didn't feel good. It was hard to quit. I just kept wanting it. And, you know, it's just, it's a stimulant. So it is a stimulant. There isn't food value to it. And, you know, when you start to get yourself off the sugar train, you know, it's easier to supplement, let's say, with a really tasty apple or some fresh pineapple. And, you know, you can start to cut that with, you know, sweets like that. And then you move into, okay, did you eat three meals today? Did you have enough water? Were you drinking coffee in the middle of the day to spike up, you know, your blood sugar and then crash it down later? Then again, you need something to bring it back up, which you want to go and have some sugar. And I always put, you know, even like bread items in a sugar category, because it will also spike your blood sugar and, you know, react the same way. And, you know, bread is bread. It's tasty. It's delicious. But you're better off eating, you know, a lot of other types of foods rather than reaching for bread as your first thing.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I know you also have written some things on detoxifying herbs and spices. What are some of those things that we can put on our food if we're making something at home that can just give us a little dash of that detox while we're cooking?
Yeah, I mean, using things like oregano is extremely helpful to the body. Ginger is so good for digestion and helping to get toxins out of the system. You've got things, you know, even garlic and lemon, you know, having a big glass of water in the morning with a half a squeezed lemon is extremely great for the liver. You can make different types of herbal teas or, you know, buy herbal teas that, you know, really do help pull things out of the body. I mean, the list is endless. You've got turmeric for inflammation. Even parsley is not just something that you should put on the side of the plate. It's things that you can actually eat. It helps to pull things out of the system. And, you know, you could juice it in with, you know, doing something like a smoothie. And you really do the body quite amount of good. And there's so much information all over the internet on different types of smoothies and foods that you can add to your diet that it costs you nothing, but it really will help as compared to, you know, picking lazy food. And, you know, you can add flavor and taste and actually intensify how much better your body feels.
Yeah, good all the way around. Dr. Gautze, thank you for your time. Great to visit with you today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care. Dr. Julie Gautze. She's co-founder of the Florida Wellness Institute, by the way, as well. She did pitch a product that she endorses. It's called Absorbaid. You can check that out if you want to. We did not get paid anything for having her on to say that, so I always like to try to be transparent about those things. 550 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, on a couple of emails here that have come in today talking about a few things in the news cycle, so we'll hit them for you as we finish up on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, President Trump is going to attend the Super Bowl on Sunday in New Orleans, being reported at a number of different places. Now we're on the media world, so Trump going to the Super Bowl. Tulsi Gabbard got out of committee today, too, which we didn't know for sure that was going to happen. She is Trump's pick for the next director of national intelligence. 9-8 vote along party lines out of the Senate Intelligence Committee. She had made some comments that a lot of people thought made it seem like she was a little too cozy with Russia in the war against Ukraine. She met with Bashar al-Assad when he was a leader of Syria, and that got some people irritated that she was sort of dignifying him when she shouldn't have been. And then there's some stuff about Edward Snowden, and I someday have to read up on what the Snowden story is all about, but people think she's defended him a little too vociferously in the past. So that vote now goes to the Senate floor, and it looks like they think they have the votes to get it done. Susan Collins says that she'll vote for her. I guess there's a couple of people that say that they are not, or that they, Mitch McConnell. Some reason Mitch McConnell is saying no to so many of these, along with Senator John Curtis. But I think they've got enough votes to get her through, from what this article on thehill.com is telling us. So there you go on that. Email about red flag laws. We were talking about this yesterday. Steve, it's a fact proven by the sworn testimony of high-level agencies that psychological operations have been and are performed on unwitting non-consenting subjects, including long-term manipulations to produce dupes for the purpose of gun-related false flag operations. So I'm going to have to read up on this a little bit. That one gets a little deep, so we got that going there today. All right. I'm going to try to find out. Amy wants to find out how she can sign the petition for a recall election on Heather Keeler. So I'm going to look into that. I've emailed a couple people I thought might know. So we'll try to get that done for you here over the next couple of days or so, trying to make that happen. I am one of those people that's going to tell you, call your lawmaker and say, don't vote for the daylight savings time bill. I know some people don't like it, but I do. And I'm not the only one. And if those of us who don't like it do nothing, this is going to go through. And it's going to be dark an hour too early in the summer. This is not rocket science. We can do this, people. It's not this horrible adjustment that you can't live with. Okay, someone's going to email me like, I have a clinically diagnosed, I developed this disease because of daylight savings. I just got to make your voice heard on this one, because it seems like there is a groundswell to get rid of daylight savings time. I don't want to change the time zone lines. I don't want to do any of that, but I want to keep it light out late in the summer. Our summers are way too short as they are. All right, that'll do it for today's show. We'll be in Watford City doing the program live tomorrow. Until then, my friend, have a great night and keep on flying that flag.